that sort of business nous. You know, there's this misconception that women have poorer business nous than men. I just think that needs to be challenged. And I think the young girls, particularly, you know, through the school environment and through their networks, should be supported to understand that you can challenge those stereotypes and you can have a go at these business ideas and go and find those learning opportunities and build your knowledge about what options are available for you.
And it's programs like Inclusion Squared that makes a huge difference in bringing diversity into the workplace and beyond through getting young women into STEM. We're talking with Alex Harrington from the Warren Centre, who together with Rare Birds has set out this fantastic program for young women to lead STEM innovation in the industry.
You're listening to the Physics Ed Podcast. For hundreds of ideas, free experiments and more, go to physicseducation.com.au. And now, here's your host, Ben Newsome.
Yes, welcome again to another Physics Ed Podcast. Yet again, we've got a big episode because we get to speak with someone doing some fantastic work when it comes to including people in STEM, and that's very much what Alex Harrington is truly about. She's the Chief Operating Officer out of the Warren Centre, and if you've never heard of the Warren Centre, they're out of the University of Sydney, and they're very much a think tank. They do lots of big picture thinking and helping industry to innovate and think towards the future in many, many, many different ways. And one of the programs they've been really working on lately is Inclusion Squared, which is partially funded under the Women in STEM and Entrepreneurship Program, which is an initiative of the National Innovation and Science Agenda. So we've got a bit to hear about because it's all about getting young women into STEM and not only doing the science and the tech and the engineering and the maths, it's all about leading it and being entrepreneurs and really producing some serious value for Australia and beyond. So without further ado, let's hear from Alex Harrington. She's got a lot to say and I loved having a chat with her.
This is the Physics Ed Podcast.
So my role is the Chief Operating Officer at the Warren Centre. We're a science, technology and innovation think tank based at the University of Sydney. And what we do is we look at the way things are operating in industry and in society. And we do sort of, I suppose I'd call it research, where we write reports or we go and talk to people or we put together industry roundtables or networking events where we work out, right, is there a problem? Is there a better way to do something? And get people sort of collaboratively thinking about how they can move forward with a different way of doing something. So we started in 1983. Our first project was looking at local area networks now and how they can improve productivity. Local area networks, people now just would completely take for granted. But back then, the idea of having network systems was quite foreign and businesses didn't tend to operate that way. So that was something that the Warren Centre did, putting that information out there. And we've done lots of projects like that. We looked at electric vehicles in 1991. We looked at coal seam gas as an energy supply in 1994. And one of my favourite projects was in 1988. We looked at a project called Preparing Australians for a Future with Technology. And that report identified that we probably needed to do better in terms of letting society know how technology was going to change the world that they lived in. And one of the outcomes from that report was to encourage better collaboration between industry and academia around research and training. And that led to the formation of the Cooperative Research Centres program, a program that some recent reviews estimated has added $14 billion worth of value to the Australian economy. So it's quite significant.
Not only significant, what a vibrant place to work in. I was just trying to get my head around. You moved from electric cars through to looking at the future. Wow. I mean, what a brilliant thing to actually have, you know, put together as a think tank. And more just thinking and producing reports, actually helping steering people in the real world, in the real industry that does real things.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And we've looked at things like energy efficiency for a very long time. And we've done a sort of project every couple of years looking at how different sectors of industry can improve their energy efficiency, whether that be the process industries, whether it be sort of bulk production industries, whether that be the built environment. We've done these projects to sort of say, well, hang on, you're performing better than you are. Why is that the case? What are the factors that are making you more energy efficient? And we put that together and we publish it to industry. So it's owned by industry so they can implement it.
Wow. And I'm just sort of just wondering, just with all this, you know, it's a genuine scope. How did you get involved with this? You personally?
So I came to the Warren Center from, I was working doing sustainability for a large property group, and we were involved in a project called the Low Energy High Rise Project. So this was one of these energy efficiency projects, and it was basically a project that wanted to understand why, when two buildings were built the same, they had all the same plant and equipment, one would always perform better from an energy efficiency point of view than the other. So what were the management factors? What were the, if you like, the soft skill factors that were going in to influence the energy efficiency? So I was working on the property, in property, on that side of the equation, and decided that I wanted to change from corporate life. I'd just finished writing a $41 million energy efficiency upgrade plan for our property portfolio. So it was a big job. All of those contracts were being let, and the project was well underway and it was starting to show progress, but I wanted to do something different. So I spoke to the Warren Center about volunteering a bit more on the project if I took some time off, and they said, well, why don't you come and join us? So I did.
And wind it forward to today, you're now heavily involved in all these projects yourself. I mean, that's obviously a fantastic outcome for yourself, but also just beginning to be able to actually bring your background in energy and looking after buildings, everything else. Hey, by the way, the schools actually do model this a lot, actually, with their own classrooms. I mean, there's very much energy units within the school curriculum. And It's great to hear that, you know, it's not just pretended to happen in the real world. It generally happens.
Oh, it absolutely matters. For a lot of industries, their two biggest costs are, you know, people, but then also their operational costs. What does it cost to keep the lights on and the business running? Yeah. And for high, you know, manufacturing technology-based industries, the energy input, and particularly into things like mining sector as well, that energy input, it can be quite significant. And as a result, it comes with a high cost. So understanding how to improve that and how to be more energy efficient is something that really drives businesses. And there are dedicated roles across industry focused exactly on that task.
Now, amongst all your different projects that you've got, and let's be honest, there's a plethora of them, one which certainly grabbed my eye and it very much impacts the sort of things that we get involved with and what schools get involved with and the broader community is this new program called Inclusion Square, which I'd love you to tell us a bit more about this, because I reckon it's a fantastic thing.
Oh, great. Oh, yeah, absolutely. So Inclusion Squared is our Women in STEM and Entrepreneurship program. And what we did was we looked around and said, right, who's doing other activities in encouraging greater gender diversity in STEM fields particularly? And we thought, well, we don't want to replicate what's out there. So we took a three-tiered approach. The first tier is to support girls in school. The second tier is to look at entrepreneurship and how to give women the skills in understanding entrepreneurship so they can look at taking a step on that journey if they want to. And the third step is senior career progression. So I might talk about, because it's probably the most relevant. So the videos in schools, when we looked around, we saw that a lot of, you know, STEM videos were kind of like, here's me at the International Space Station, which is not really relatable. And the reality is not a lot of people actually get to the International Space Station, especially if you're female. So that sort of video we didn't think was particularly inspiring. And we also noticed there was a bit of a tendency to want to characterize people in STEM careers by the way they looked. So, you know, talking to someone or presenting someone as a scientist and making sure they were wearing safety glasses and a lab coat. There are an awful lot of scientists out there who don't wear a lab coat or safety glasses. So what we did was we asked girls who are on, young women who are on their own STEM career journey at university, to go on film and to talk about their experience, their process, what inspired them at school and what was happening to them. And what you take out of that is a couple of things. One is that girls are really, really motivated by what they're interested in and having an impact and making a difference. They don't see themselves as their career. So they don't necessarily, these young women will talk about, I really enjoy engineering or I really enjoy maths and I like applying it in terms of computer science or whatever it is that they're interested in. They don't define themselves by that role. And I think that's really important because we don't know what the jobs of the future are going to be. And skills transference and adaptability are just going to become so important. So pitching to students that idea of, we need to study really hard, you get a good ATAR, and then you go and become an engineer. it sounds very finite and it sounds very destination focused, when really what we were trying to get across is it's a journey, and you can take a multiple different steps across industries, up and down through industries, and into different fields and different locations. So that's what really came across in these videos. And so we've just completed that project, and we're shortly about to send all those videos out to schools, but you can find them on our YouTube channel at the Warren Centre.
Absolutely. And they are fantastic videos, and heart to heart, exactly how undergraduate students have experienced it to date so far, and where they think they're going to go in their future. And I can imagine this is going to really help with, people's participation in year 11 and 12 STEM subjects. I mean, I'd hope so, as it gets out into the broader community.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. One of the things that's really important is that, STEM learning can be really, really great. And it's unfortunate that often at school, the emphasis is very much on the ATAR, which is a ranking, but there's so much more learning and opportunity that happens beyond that. There are multiple different ways that you can access university. There are different pathways available to you. It's not all about the ATAR. And I think the important thing, especially for young women, is to find the thing that really interests you, and then don't let anyone hold you back. If you're interested in it and you're passionate about it and you connect with that field, you'll be motivated more than you need to succeed in it.
And what I really love about this program is it's not just, hey, here's a report, here's some videos, and digest if you wish, or don't watch if you don't want. You've partnered with this, collaborated with Rare Birds, which is very much about entrepreneurship in a big way. I mean, let's just hear a bit more about what Rare Birds does.
So Rare Birds is an amazing organisation started by brilliant entrepreneur Jo Burston. So Jo runs her own business called Job Capital. She set that up nearly 6 years ago now, and it's worth $40 million. So she's successful in her own right. She's done a couple of other startups. But one of the things she did is she took a film crew back to her primary school and back to her high school. And when she asked the question, what is an entrepreneur? The response was typically a man who does something, or a businessman. No one identified that females could be entrepreneurs just as successfully as men, and no one was able to point to any examples of this. So she started the Rare Birds program deliberately to try and counteract this. And she's written some fantastic and put together some fantastic resources. So they've got a book called Hashtag If She Can, I Can. And it's all about the fundamental principle is, if you can see it, you can be it. She's got a wonderful book called 50 Female Entrepreneurs in Australia, where she interviewed all these women who've set up their own businesses and are really successful. So talking about their journey and what worked, what didn't, the successes and the failures, which are just as important. And it's a really great program. So we've been running the entrepreneurship part of our program. We've been doing an Entrepreneurship 101 course, which is built around the idea that there really isn't, well, we couldn't see anything out there. And certainly, I was working on a tech idea and building a company, and I couldn't find this sort of assistance. There wasn't a place you could go to understand, right, what does step one look like in setting up a business? What does step two look like? What does step three look like? So we put it together as a one-day masterclass. So it's setting up your business and accounting for your future. So why you have to register a business, what that process looks like, all the legal 101. And it's all around, these are the things you need to be aware of to not create problems for yourself. We did intellectual property and trademarks, branding and marketing, getting online. And then we had a sort of speed dating afternoon with entrepreneurs in practice. So we had four female entrepreneurs in different areas. So Jo Burston obviously was one of them. Anne Moore from Plan Do, Louise Gagan from Fold 7, and Carola Jansen from Everty. So they're very, very different companies, but all of those women volunteered their time and spoke to these small groups about their experience, what they learned on their journey. And it was a really fantastic day. And we finished with it in a sort of overview of the startup ecosystem. What are the resources that are available, so be that through an accelerator, through an incubator, through a government grant, through universities, through training organisations, and finally a session from Jo Burston about maintaining the enthusiasm, which is so important.
Oh yeah, you bet, especially like once all the fervour has gone down when getting all your trademarks and stuff together. I mean, eventually you've got a business to run and you do need that energy behind you to keep that going day after day. And I guess I'm just thinking about a day like this, that's just obviously highly valuable for anyone who was able to attend. I kind of think like if you're a teacher with kids who are thinking about, oh, maybe they might get into business or maybe they might get into science or maybe they're not quite sure. What you just said about that whole if you can see it, you can be it type headspace is the ability to be able to get yourself exposed to those type of things. That's very hard for high school students to see. And even sometimes as you go into early adults. I mean, I'm just wondering what sort of advice, I guess, even just ideas at this point, would you give for someone who wouldn't be able to, not necessarily be able to attend your programs, because let's be honest, not all of us can always attend. Like, it'd be awesome if we all could, but sometimes there's not enough space. How could you emulate something like that if you're in a regional area or you know what I mean?
Oh, definitely. Look, I would talk to, particularly for teachers and high school teachers, this is absolutely one of the pathways that's available. You know, my generation, when we grew up, it was you went to university and you became an agricultural scientist. That was it. That was the message. And you went and worked for someone. We know that there are many other options available. And one of the things I would do is start with your local state organisation. So in New South Wales, for example, they have Business Connect. And just pick up the phone or get online, have a look at those platforms and see what resources are available. Because it's quite astounding that there's lots of information out there. And kids really need to understand, I think, that having an idea and seeing if it works, that's entrepreneurship. You know, I heard someone the other day saying, Annie Parker, who's the global head of Microsoft startups based here in Australia, is a wonderful motivator. And she was saying, entrepreneurship is finding an idea, testing it, finding an idea, testing it, finding an idea, testing it until you get the one that works. Yeah. And that determination and tenacity and finding that opportunity to succeed in running your own business and in pursuing your own idea is a wonderful skill. And there are a lot of programs out there. So I'd have a look at state programs, have a look at, organizations like Questacon have one, I believe, as well. And just start looking online and seeing what's available.
And I suppose as we go into the future, hopefully things start to even out. I mean, I'm just looking ahead, basically at the numbers themselves. So in 2014, only one in four startups were founded by women. So I'm guessing the outcome that you're hoping for would be it would actually go on parity what the gender percentages actually are in the real world in the first place, right? Oh.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There's an incredible woman in Canada called Vicky Saunders who runs a program called CEO. And her program is very much about, she's really fascinated by some of the ideas that women come up with are very insightful, but they're not traditional business ideas. So she was showing us one that was a beeswax-based food wrap. So it keeps food fresh while letting it still breathe. And she was saying that's exactly the sort of thing that you show it to, people who, not just women, but men as well. If they're doing any food preparation in the home, they go, this is brilliant. But if they're not doing any food preparation in the home and they're sitting in a venture capital firm going, should I fund this? It's very hard for them to see that opportunity. So she had a lot of really great examples like that. But I think the other thing is we know now that the largest economic group globally is women. Women are making most of the purchasing decisions. Women are making most of the discretionary spend decisions, and many of them are running the household budget. So that sort of business nous, there's this misconception that women have poorer business nous than men. I just think that needs to be challenged. And I think the young girls, particularly, through the school environment and through their networks, should be supported to understand that you can challenge those stereotypes and you can have a go at these business ideas and go and find those learning opportunities and build your knowledge about what options are available for you.
And it is these sort of programs like Inclusion Square that really help this happen. Like, it's really, and let's be honest, there's many out there, and it seems like we just keep on doing it and it will come a time when everything's parity and happy days. Like, this is going to be a good thing. It's great for the diversity and it's great for the world at large, which is fantastic. And I must say, speaking of opportunities and things, just focusing in on yourself just for a moment, you've been lucky enough to pick up quite a bit of an opportunity yourself. Congratulations on your Churchill Fellowship.
Well, thanks, Ben. Yeah, really, really looking forward to it.
Yeah, so where are you going? What are you getting up to? What is the thing that you're involved with here?
So one of the things I've been doing at the Warren Center is we do a weekly tech newsletter. It's called The Prototype. So if anyone's interested in it, go to thewarrencenter.org.au and look for The Prototype and you can sign up to it. It's a great resource for teachers because it's all the tech news around the world. So what's happening at the leading edge? And we do have teachers who subscribe to it and they think it's wonderful because they are super informed when they're talking to their class. So this is great for a high school teacher. But through that experience, I started to become aware of how quickly autonomous vehicle technology was developing at a rapid rate around the world, but through different schemes, different mechanisms, different perspectives. So everything from the way it would operate to be safe, the way the security would work, who would be the responsible party for the autonomous vehicle, differed depending on which company was doing it and which location it was at. So that led me to look at, explore the idea of doing a PhD in the field. And I then sort of thought, hang on, I'm going to have to travel overseas to really study this properly. How am I going to fund that? And then I came across the Churchill Trust, which I encourage everybody to have a look at. It's a wonderful organisation that supports Australians from all walks of life to go overseas and study a subject that they are passionate in. And for me, that was autonomous vehicles. So what I'm going to do is travel to Europe, the US and Japan later in the year to look at how autonomous vehicles are being managed in different locations and ask questions around, you know, who owns this technology? Does it serve what the public needs? Is it safe? Is it functional? How does it work in a versus public transport, for example? Is it useful for people with greater needs? So people with limited mobility or vision impairment and things like that. What's the role that autonomous vehicles can play? And can Australia be part of this opportunity to roll out autonomous vehicles in a way that is practical, sensible and safe and beneficial for society? That's really what I want to find out.
And it's a huge thing. I mean, we do a lot of work with the NRMA, so the National Roads and Motoring Association. And speaking with the Senior Motoring Education Manager of NRA, they know that this is coming down at us, whether it's 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, at some point, this is going to happen. And a project like this is just critical. It's as simple as that.
Oh, absolutely. And I am so grateful to the NRMA because they've funded my scholarship. So the NRMA, New South Wales ACT Road Safety Trust have been a big supporter of my fellowship. So that's fantastic. And I'm enormously grateful to them.
Absolutely so. And actually, a quick shout out to them. If you go on this churchilltrust.com.au, go check it out. And we are going to put this out before closing time. So it is going to close on the 27th of April, by the way. If you want to apply and you've got a project you know will help your community, do so. Go for it. It's worth your time.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Alex, thanks so much for coming on board and just sharing with us just a little small snippet about Inclusion Squared. I mean, I'm guessing we can find most information on the Warren Center's website, yeah?
Yep, thewarrencenter.org.au.
Awesome.
Absolutely.
And what we'll do, we'll put that all in the show notes as well. And look, fantastic. Hey, when do you get to fly out, by the way?
Oh, I haven't finished booking everything, but I think end of October will be the plan.
Wow. Wow. You're just in time for winter over there. There you go.
Yes.
There you go. Well, have a fantastic trip for that. Now, undoubtedly, we'll catch up before then, but well done. And I really hope that if you want to get engaged, if you're listening on and going, you know what, maybe I should get my class engaged or whatever it is that you happen to be involved in, yeah, go check out the Warren Center with the Inclusion Squared program. I think it's fantastic and it's certainly going to help us in the future. Thanks so much, Alex, for coming on board.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Thanks so much, Ben.
This is the Physics Ed Podcast. We're all about science, ed tech and more. To see 100 fun free experiments you can do with your class, go to physicseducation.com.au. That's physics spelled F-I-Z-Z-I-C-S. And click 100 free experiments.
Well, there you go. We were just hearing from Alex Harrington, who has a lot to say about women in STEM, and she's doing something about it, which I love. And you can really go check out what the Warren Center has been doing with Inclusion Squared, and check out what Rare Birds has been doing too for women in entrepreneurship. It's very, very, very cool. Now, you might be wondering, how can you get involved yourself? Now, this particular initiative, there's a few different ways you can do this. Perhaps if you happen to be working at a major company or even a minor company, you could be sponsoring and helping support some of their events. And perhaps you might want to think, well, maybe could you consider committing someone from your organization as a program participant, or nominating mentors or speakers from your organization to help these young women along their journey. It would be very, very cool. And I tell you what, it's really something to keep an eye on, because this Inclusion Squared is part of a greater movement to get women into STEM. And it's not just about talking about it, it's about making it actually happen.
You're listening to the Physics Ed Podcast. Why don't you book us for a science show or workshop in your school? We love seeing students get excited about science, and you will too. Go to physicseducation.com.au and click on schools for more info.
Only recently we had International Women's Day, and in light of this, Kate and Duncan on our sister podcast, Physics Twist, were chatting about just where the divide starts to happen in STEM, and you'd be amazed just how early it actually is when they did some research.
But yeah, they also did this really interesting study about when girls and boys decide that they're smart.
Really?
Yeah. What? Apparently people are five. You decide if you are smart when you are 5 years old.
Wow, that seems younger than I thought.
Yeah, right? I was like, oh man, that is not cool.
Surely you'd need some sort of basis of comparison.
Yep.
To make that decision, but by the time you're five, you've only just started kindergarten.
So, apparently, 5-year-old girls are just as likely to say that girls can be really, really smart, but when they're six, they think that boys are more likely to be smart than girls.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Is that because they've just entered school and all of a sudden that is being thrust upon them?
That's the only thing that this study I was reading was saying, but yeah. It's really hard to know. Apparently, girls are more likely to go for, like, games and activities where they have to work hard rather than be smart, which is really interesting. So girls apparently have a much better work ethic.
Yes, serious food for thought, without a doubt. It's amazing what sort of expectations we're setting our kids without even realizing it. I mean, amazing. Kate had found this research that says 5-year-old kids are making that assumption of themselves at such a tender age. Big, serious problem for not only schools, but households and the greater public as a whole. Yes, we've got to do something about this. In fact, it's well worth listening to Kate and Duncan's conversation on Physics Twist, our other podcast, where they get right into this issue. And it's well worth your time when subscribing to that podcast, because they do all sorts of different areas of science and technology. Well worth your time. But we've still got more episodes coming up too. But until then, I hope you're making your classrooms awesome, engaging, fun, and incredibly inclusive, so that the whole world can benefit as a result. You've been listening to me, Ben Newsom from Physics Education, and you've been listening to the Phys Ed podcast. I'll catch you next week.
You've been listening to another Physics Ed podcast. We're excited about science. Subscribe to us on iTunes to download the next episode as soon as it's released. And don't forget, for hundreds of ideas, free experiments, our new Be Amazing book, and more, go to physicseducation.com.au. That's physics spelled FIZZICS.
This podcast is part of the Australian Educators Online Network. AEON.net.au